It's my privilege to advise that Dr. Gregory Domer has returned. We had a great visit in the not-too-distant future, and he's so good. Dr. Domer is a vascular surgeon. He is board-certified in vascular surgery, vascular and endovascular surgeon. After medical school, Dr. Domer completed a residency in surgery at St. Luke's Roosevelt Medical Center in New York. Dr. Domer completed a fellowship in vascular surgery at UMDNJ, Robert Wood Johnson University Medical School in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And Dr. Domer completed an endovascular surgery fellowship at Union Memorial Hospital in Baltimore, Maryland. His special interests include vascular and endovascular surgery, aortic disease, carotid disease, limb preservation interventions, and dialysis access. And he is an author of numerous articles in peer-reviewed journals and medical textbooks. And in addition to being a great surgeon, he holds leadership titles as Division Director of Vascular Surgery at Deborah Heart and Lung Center and Program Director of Vascular Surgery Fellowship. Deborah Heart and Lung Center presents Dr. Gregory Domer. Doctor, welcome back.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Harry.
My pleasure. Great to have you back. And I get to play game show host, which I love. It's a dream of mine. And I get to do it today because we're going to do fact or fiction regarding vascular disease. So question number one, Dr. Domer, vascular disease is any disease of your vascular system, including veins and arteries, considered vascular disease, fact or fiction?
Fact. Just to give people a little background, because I always get this when I'm first meeting people at a dinner party or a cocktail party, and somebody will ask, what do I do? And usually it's a female will say, I tell them I'm a vascular surgeon, and they will say, oh, thank God, I've got this little varicosity on the back of my leg, and I'm very concerned that I have serious vascular disease. Well, so there are arteries and veins, and the arteries are really the important component, although everything, of course, is important. But the arteries are the conduits that bring oxygenated blood and nutrients directly from our heart to all throughout our body. We only have a few arteries, where veins, we have thousands and thousands of veins. And veins are what we typically see on our skin, either as varicosities or just normal bulging veins that we can see through the skin. And the veins, although they can cause problems, it's rare that there are any significant problems caused by venous disease. The arteries are very different, and we can't see the arteries. They're deep down under the muscle. And having venous disease or some varicosities is not in any way related to arterial disease. So, again, the arteries being the most important component of our vascular system.
So usually when people see that, they think, oh, my God, this must be terrible. Look how that's bulging. Oh, my gosh. You know, you think you don't like the aesthetics of it. That's one thing. But the peace of mind that it would typically not be a serious health matter is good to know, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you have some varicosities, they can become painful and so forth, but rarely do they ever cause significant problems. So the presence is not something to be concerned about.
The topic this half hour on Deborah Heart and Lung Center presents Dr. Gregory Domer is vascular disease, fact or fiction. Question number two, vascular disease includes abdominal aortic aneurysm, carotid artery disease, and peripheral arterial disease, PAD, fact or fiction?
Fact. So vascular disease is a component of all of those things. They present very differently, and we'll talk a little bit about each of the different presentations for aneurysm and carotid disease and peripheral artery disease at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah. How about right now? What are these conditions, and what do we need to know about them?
Well, so the AAA, or abdominal aortic aneurysm, is one of the, I think, the 14th leading cause of death in this country. So it's something that usually occurs as we age. It's not something that suddenly arises. And so all people, men especially, above the age of 65 should undergo at least a one-time screening with just an ultrasound to determine whether they have an aneurysm or not. And what an aneurysm is, it's a bulging out of the aorta. So the aorta is the largest blood vessel in the body that comes directly off the heart and supplies all the blood throughout our body. The abdominal aorta is located really just behind the belly button. And if it enlarges to a size of 5.5 centimeters, then the risk of rupture significantly increases because there's a finite amount of tissue. So as that aneurysm expands or that aorta expands, the tissue becomes thinner and thinner, which can lead to rupture. It's analogous to maybe, you know, squeezing the side of a balloon where it just becomes larger. And as it becomes larger, it thins out until eventually it ruptures. So it is important to, if you're of the age of 65 or older, especially with a smoking history, to talk to your primary care about getting a one-time screening.
So hypothetically, Dr. Domer, if it was of a certain size, and we'll say smaller than the size that you noted where you might have to intervene or would have to intervene, if it's smaller, is that something that you then, you watch that over time, or how do you deal with that?
Yeah, so we put patients into what's called a surveillance program, which simply means we monitor it. And if it's very small, so less than 4 centimeters, we're only watching it every 3 to 5 years with an ultrasound because once we've established that they're present, they grow very, very slowly. They grow at best about 0.5 centimeter per year. Sometimes they do grow more rapidly, and if that's the case, we may consider doing intervention, but they typically grow very slowly, so we put patients into a surveillance program. And once they start getting a little bit larger, we increase that frequency to every 6 months. And so you might think, well, I have an aneurysm, I want it fixed, and we often run into this. Well, there's been multiple studies looking at this, and fixing smaller aneurysms, there's a greater risk of having a problem from the procedure than there is of just continuing to watch it. So until it gets to a size of 5.5 centimeters or larger, then that risk-benefit ratio flips, and there is then a greater risk of it rupturing than there is of it us fixing it.
The topic, please continue, go.
Just to say that we follow probably 1,500, maybe 2,000 aneurysms amongst all of the practitioners here.
Wow.
And only end up operating on maybe about 50 or 60 a year.
Wow. That's excellent context. Vascular disease is the topic on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents. Dr. Gregory Domer, to make an appointment, it is simple to do. Call 609-621-2080. That's 609-621-2080 or on the web at demanddeborah.org, and you will see the hyperlink to scheduling an appointment. Fact or fiction, Dr. Domer, vascular disease is a disease of the elderly. Is age a risk for vascular disease?
Yes, absolutely. It's fact. As we get older, the chances of developing vascular disease significantly increases. And in fact, after we reach the age of 40, each decade, that incidence or prevalence of vascular disease doubles. So as we get older, the prevalence of vascular disease significantly increases. And again, there are screening programs and screening protocols that people should be aware of that they should talk to their primary care physicians. Somebody with significant comorbidities, so namely diabetes, is probably the most important, but obesity or sedentary lifestyle and smoking, of course, is the big one. They should probably be screened at a younger age, but everybody at the age of 60 to 70 should be screened at least one time for peripheral vascular disease. And it's a simple test. One, it can just be done with physical examination, or we can do something called an ankle brachial index, which is essentially just measuring the blood pressure at our ankle and comparing it to the blood pressure in our arms. And we use our arms as the control, so the brachial artery there, because the incidence of peripheral vascular disease in the upper extremities is extremely rare. So we use that as our control to compare the ankle pressure. And if there is a significant difference, then there is the diagnosis then of peripheral vascular disease. But I think it's important to note that peripheral vascular disease occurs in, it used to be thought, well, when I used to give these lectures about peripheral vascular disease 10, 15, 20 years ago, the estimate was 8 to 12 million people. But now in the last year or two, there's new data to come out that says there's 19 to 21 million people in the world with peripheral vascular disease. Now, the good news is, though, is only a very small portion of those people ever need anything done. And only 30% of those people are even going to be symptomatic. But it is important to know whether you have peripheral vascular disease, because those people need to be on diet modification, heart-healthy diet, possibly antiplatelet therapy. If they have diabetes, make sure it's well-controlled. And then eating well and exercising and all of those things will help to mitigate the progression of vascular disease to somebody that then does need vascular disease, which is really only about 1.5% of people, where if we don't do a revascularization procedure, they run the risk of major amputation.
You are listening to Dr. Gregory Domer. The topic on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents is vascular disease, and we're doing a fact or fiction model, if you will. And you touched on some of this, but there's enough meat on the bone that I'm going to give it to you as a standalone question anyhow. Fact or fiction, Dr. Domer, vascular disease is caused by obesity, diabetes, you mentioned both of them, genetics, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and sedentary lifestyle.
That's fact. So all of those things are risk factors. So we separate our risk factors into modifiable and non-modifiable. So obviously age, genetics, or family history is non-modifiable. There's nothing we can do about that. And also sex. So males typically have a higher incidence of vascular disease compared to females. Now, the modifiable risk factors, we absolutely can do something about, and it's been estimated that 80 to 90% of people with appropriate modification of diet, cholesterol, so with medications, exercise, and heart-healthy diet can prevent cardiovascular heart attack or stroke. So it's extremely important to talk to your primary care physician or even a nutritionist maybe about diet modification. The biggest one is smoking. So, you know, I think I've mentioned this before, that 80 to 85% of the people that I see in the clinic are smokers or former smokers. So those that are still smoking, it's your life really depends on it that you quit smoking and then adapt some of these other risk modifications.
We are already to halftime, which I always remark with Dr. Domer how incredibly fast our time together goes. We take only one break. We will go, and it's a short break. I'm very pleased to report we're only going to go away for a few clicks, more than 2 minutes. And when we come back, is vascular disease sneaky? Can vascular disease have no symptoms at all, and yet you may have it? Dr. Domer will answer that next in Fact or Fiction on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents. Dr. Gregory Domer, visiting right here on the Hurley in the Morning program. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It is Hurley in the Morning, and it's my privilege to present Dr. Gregory Domer. And if you've missed any of the last 15 minutes or so, please, when the podcast is uploaded, please download it, because Dr. Domer is in the midst of, we're about halftime, of putting on a masterclass on vascular disease. This would be cruel, it would be sneaky, and is it fact or fiction that vascular disease may have no symptoms? Fact or fiction, Dr. Domer?
Unfortunately, it's fact. There are several vascular disease processes and pathology that are asymptomatic, and those being the most deadly of which are AAAs, the abdominal aortic aneurysm. The vast majority of people that we see with AAA, it's picked up incidentally. So somebody going in maybe for back pain and to their chiropractor or their PCP or maybe an orthopedic surgeon, and they obtain just even a plain film x-ray, and you can see the outline of an aneurysm oftentimes. And certainly if they undergo an MRI or a CAT scan for any reason, we'll pick up the AAA, and those patients are then referred into us. And again, the good news is the vast majority of those won't need anything done. They're just put into the surveillance program. But it's extremely important for those people that have never been diagnosed that are of the age of 65 or older, especially with a smoking history, to undergo the one-time screening test with just an ultrasound, and that can be obtained through your PCP. The other disease, which is a silent killer, is carotid disease. So oftentimes the first symptom is never pain or anything like that. It's a stroke or a mini stroke. And those patients should also be, well, with the appropriate comorbidities, those patients can be screened. And that's why the doctor, when you go to the doctor's office, he listens to your neck with a stethoscope. He's listening for something called a bruit. It's analogous to maybe like a river with multiple rocks, the rapids, right? It's very loud and noisy, and that's because of all the obstructions in the water. Well, what you're listening for is obstruction in the vessel that can represent plaque. Now, it's not a great test, but it's something that can be easily done. And if a bruit is noted, then the real test to have done is a carotid duplex or an ultrasound that will then look at the artery and determine whether or not there are significant blockages there.
Doctor, this is just a follow-up from the peanut gallery here. Would a typical 65-year-old and older person have some calcification around that? Would that be normal or would that be abnormal?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So what happens is it's never a disease that starts one day and 6 weeks later it's become significant. We've seen in autopsy reports in even teenagers that there are the beginnings, there are just streaks of fibrofatty debris within the vessel wall or atherosclerosis. It's not causing a stenosis, it's not causing a problem, but it's the precursor for what can happen when somebody then turns, say, 65. So another 40 to 50 years later, those streaks of plaque will continue to accumulate debris, causing, fibrofatty tissue that platelets and if your cholesterol is abnormal, it'll stick to those areas. And over time, we're talking decades, can lead to significant stenoses, which can lead to either heart attack or stroke, depending on what vessel we're talking about.
In addition to being a great vascular and endovascular surgeon, Dr. Domer is also the Division Director of Vascular Surgery and the Program Director of the Vascular Surgery Fellowship at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. Fact or fiction, Dr. Domer, vascular disease is diagnosed with blood tests, imaging, and a physical exam.
Yes, that's fact. So again, blood testing would be looking at your cholesterol. So anybody with dyslipidemia or hyperlipidemia, abnormal cholesterol testing needs to be medicated. Oftentimes people will refuse medications and try and do it with just a heart healthy diet, and that's fine as long as you're being monitored. But there are libraries full of information on statins. So statin therapy is one of the sort of miracle drugs of our time that dramatically decreases the risk of heart attack and stroke because it stabilizes that plaque that is now present and helps to prevent progression. So the blood test would be just looking at your lipid profile. The other test that can be done then, if on physical examination, if we find an abnormality, we can do ultrasound testing. And if ultrasound testing suggests that there may be something significant there, we typically would then go to a CAT scan or an MRI or even a diagnostic angiogram, although that's typically reserved for patients that we're planning to do some sort of intervention, so people that have significant symptoms related to their vascular disease. So there are multiple tests that can be done, and The vast majority of them are non-invasive and no radiation involved, and that's just ultrasound testing.
To make an appointment at Deborah Heart Lung Center, you can call 609-621-2080. I'll repeat, 609-621-2080. Remember, I am your human Rolodex. If you ever need it, you can email me. I'm happy to get this to you, Harry Hurley. Just my picture will pop up and you just hit the email screen. On the web at demanddeborah.org, you can do it on any digital device, your smartphone or laptop, desktop, iPad, you name it, demanddeborah.org. You touched on medicine, but I'm still going to go with this anyhow. Fact or fiction? A variety of treatment options are available for people with vascular disease, including medications, procedures, and surgery.
Yes, that's fact, absolutely. And so we touched upon the statins, how important they are. And now there's some people are intolerant to statins. They have cramping or they may have abnormal liver function related to taking the statins. And so now there's Repatha, which is a statin alternative, which is an excellent method of lowering the cholesterol, which then lowers your risk of cardiovascular symptoms and death. So it's extremely important if you're diagnosed with having hypercholesterolemia to initiate a medical program through your PCP or your cardiologist to help prevent progression of that disease. And if you're diabetic, it's extremely important to then take your diabetic medication because increasing the amount of glucose in the body predisposes you to developing more of this atherosclerotic plaque and thus vascular, symptomatic vascular disease. And then again, just heart-healthy diet and exercise will also help mitigate the progression of disease. In fact, you know, an interesting fact that I ran across one of our conferences not too long ago is there are a few studies out there that have shown that a walking exercise program. So again, the vast majority of these people are asymptomatic, but those that are symptomatic should initiate. So we're talking about pain in their legs when they walk. It's called claudication. And that's because there's a lack of blood flow getting to the muscle. So this is extremely important, though, the distinction between having pain in your leg and pain in your chest. If you have chest pain, you need to immediately see a cardiologist or go to the emergency room. If you have pain in your leg, you're not at immediate risk of losing a leg or having a significant problem, and the vast majority of people never need anything done. In fact, I spend probably 80% of my time convincing people they don't need anything done. They can just, with a walking exercise program, it's as effective at a 12-month follow-up as intervention. So it means that people that don't have severe disabling claudication. So the people that can't walk to the other side of the room without pain, that's very different from somebody that can walk maybe two or three blocks, or I've even had people come in and say after about a mile they start to have calf pain. Well, those people definitely need to initiate a walking exercise program, and this is where the adage no pain, no gain really comes into play.
There you go.
Because you have to walk until you have the pain, and that's really the stimulus for your body to open up secondary pathways around those blockages.
Very interesting. I'm thinking just out loud, if you get pain at a mile, I guess you walk a half mile and you start walking back. Because if you go out a mile and you're a mile away and you're in pain, you've got the whole mile to deal with. Just Captain Obvious here, but reporting for duty, just something to consider to make sure that proximity-wise, you know, you're near to where you need to be safe.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. But the important thing is to do that walking until you have the pain and then keep walking. And
okay.
Once it gets severe, you stop. And after 5 to 10 minutes, that pain will subside and then you can continue walking.
To encourage people, because I hope this is true, but you're going to know if it's fact or fiction. This is a bonus question. If you continue to be disciplined and do the walking on a continual, regular basis, will you expand? Like, it used to hurt at a mile. Could you get to the point where you get in shape now to where it doesn't hurt until 2 miles? So is there a reward for being faithful to this?
Yeah, absolutely. And the vast majority of people, they may not get to 2 miles without any pain, but they'll get to a mile and a half oftentimes.
Okay.
But what's more important is they'll help to prevent the progression of the disease. And the vast majority of those people will never need an intervention. In fact, only 5 to 10%, maybe as high as 20%, depending on the severity of the disease that started out and how good they are about, you know, modifying all of their risk factors. But, you know, a small percentage of people, any way you look at it, will require some kind of intervention, as long as they do the walking exercise and they do the behave with regard to adhering to the modifiable risk factor maintenance.
Perfect clock management because of you, Dr. Domer. We are to the final question, and we've got about a minute and a half left in your program. Question, final question: vascular disease, fact or fiction? Vascular disease is a chronic condition.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a chronic condition. It's there are acute incidences of vascular disease. Probably the most common is somebody with atrial fibrillation. If they haven't been taking their medication, and rarely even if they have been taking their medication, can form blood clots that can either cause stroke, or it can go to the lower extremities or even the upper extremities, or even to the major blood vessels that go to the kidneys and the intestines. And that's oftentimes a surgical emergency where we have about a six-hour window, if it goes to the lower extremities, of opening up that blood vessel that has become acutely blocked from what's called an embolus. And that's just a small clot that's coming from the heart. And then there is acute on chronic, which is more common, and that's somebody that has significant vascular occlusive disease, that the progression has just come to a point where now the vessel is completely closed off, and that oftentimes can become a surgical emergency. But it is important to know that, you know, we see people with complete blockages of the vessels in their legs, and they can still be, it can still be modified with, you know, all of the modifiable risk factor techniques that we discussed. However, if you have severe onset of pain, you need to seek medical advice immediately.
To make an appointment at Deborah Heart and Lung Center, 609-621-2080. On the web, you can do so as well, demanddeborah.org, and you'll see, I think it's red, you'll see a hyperlink directly to scheduling an appointment. That's going to conclude our discussion today with Dr. Domer on vascular disease. Just a clinic, a free clinic that you just put on, Dr. Domer. Thank you so much for your time and expertise.
Thank you very much, Harry. Have a good day.
You do the same. Great to be with you.